All right, Shabbosai, good morning. Let's begin. Good Nerv Yom Tov. The last daf, Baruch Hashem, of 5779, and a beautiful daf it is. Today's daf is Yudbeis. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Ben Goldberg, our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Elul, in memory of his parents and as well as in the schus of all the members of the Kila, that your tefillah should be answered over the Yomim Noraim. The shir is also dedicated by Jonas and Rachel Wolf of Highland Park, New Jersey, in memory of Rachel's father. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an aliyah and the family a Nechama. We'll say just also a very special thank you to Said and the rest of the Chevra. You know, the shul was taken down and put back up, and that we have a mini base medrash is like a big thing, especially with everything going on. So especially Shkoach to Said and to the who I know there were a number of other people who helped last night. Shkoach, thank you very much. We'll say with that, let's begin. Mishnah Yud Aleph on the base, the bottom of the daf. Dishun Mizbeach HaPanimi VaHamenorah Lo Nanin VaLo Molin. Both, it's a very interesting concept. The Mishnah says over here, Dishun Mizbeach HaPanimi. So remember, again, we spoke about last week some of the halachos concerning the ashes regard on the outer Mizbeach, the Mizbeach HaChitzon. And we discussed the idea that the ashes of the Mizbeach HaChitzon are subject to Mi'ila even after they're removed from the Mizbeach, meaning even after Trumas Hadeshen. Ultimately, again, there is still an issue of mi'ila vis-a-vis those ashes. Here the Mishnah speaks about, what about the ashes of the inner Mizbeach, which of course is the Mizbeach used for Ketores, as well as the menorah. So remember again, the Ketores burns, even after it burns, there's still some ash left. The menorah burns, but even after the menorah burns, there's ashes. They call it ashes. Really, it's the residue from the wicks. So what's the halacha concerning those ashes? Lo nanin, you're not permitted to get hanah from it, but halacha l'maisa v'lo mo'alin. But ultimately, again, they are not subject to mi'ilo. Look at Rashi. Dishun mizbeach ha'panimi ba'aminorah, hadeshen shalem hayom otzion, umanicho itzel mizbeach ha'chitzon, makom shumaniach chumas hadeshen shal mizbeach ha'chitzon, v'kodem shenichushan lo nanin v'lo mo'alin. So actually, what we're going to see is, interestingly enough, the leftover ash from the inner mizbeach, as well as the leftover ash from the menorah, was actually taken out and put by the side of the mizbeach, the same place where the ashes of the mizbeach were placed. So this is an incredible idea that you wouldn't necessarily know just based on reading the psukim, because as we're going to see, the psukim aren't necessarily clear about this fact. But again, when you are left over, the same way that we spoke about, that from the outer mizbeach, you would take from the ash on top, and you would place it by the side of the Mizbeach on the ground, you would take the leftover ashes from the Mizbeach HaPanimi, from the Ketores, the leftover ashes from the menorah, and you would place them by the ground, by the ground, the side of the Mizbeach HaChitzon, the outer altar. HaMakdish Disho Metchila. But if you go ahead and you're makdish, in other words, if you go ahead and halacha lemaisa, you are makdish the ashes of the Mizbeach HaPanimi, or of the menorah, some old and bald, then ultimately, again, they will in fact be subject to me'ila. Torin shelo igia zmanon. Similarly, if you have turtle doves that have not yet reached their age. Remember, again, for bird offerings, so for torin and b'nei yona, there's a certain minimum age and a certain maximum age. So if the torin have not yet reached their minimum age, or u'b'nei yona she'avar zmanon, or ultimately, again, pigeons that have gone ahead and aged out, lo nanin velo moalin. Ultimately, again, you're not permitted to get hana, but ultimately, again, one is also not subject to mi'ila. Good. So says the Gemara. So now what the Gemara is going to focus on is the following idea. The Mishnah assumes that we knew this concept, that when you have leftover ash from the Mizbeach HaPanimi, the inner altar, which is the Ketores, and the menorah, that remaining ash is taken outside of the mikdash, of the heichal, and deposited on the ground by the Mizbeach HaChitzon. So the Gemara now focuses on that. Where do we know that from? So Bishlama, the Gemara says, Bishlama, top of Yud Beis, Mizbeach HaChitzon, Dichsiv Bei V'samo Eitzel HaMizbeach. So I know that halacha l'maisa, that the ash of the outer Mizbeach is placed on the ground by the Mizbeach, because the Pasuk itself says, V'samo Eitzel HaMizbeach, right? The Pasuk says, V'lavash HaKoyin Midobad, U'michnesei Bad Yilbasha Bizarro, V'herimes HaDesh Asher Tochal HaEish Es HaOla Ala Mizbeach, V'samo Eitzel HaMizbeach. The Torah explicitly says, you shall take from the ash that accumulates on the top of the Mizbeach. Remember, the Mizbeach we're being referred to over here is which Mizbeach? The Mizbeach Achitzon, the outer altar. You shall take the ash which accumulates on the outer Mizbeach, and you shall place it by the side of the Mizbeach itself. However, Mizbeach HaPnimi Minalon, Rebbe say, from where do I know that you take the leftover ash from the inner altar, right? Which is what we call the Mizbeach HaZahav, the golden altar, which was used only and exclusively for Kitores. How do I know that if I have leftover ash on that Mizbeach, that is taken out and deposited on the ground by the side of the outer altar? Look at Rashi, Tap Rashi and Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Eladishu Mizbeach HaPnimi Minalon, Shemanicho Itzal Mizbeach HaChitzon, Vishumolin Bo La'achar Shebaim Chuasdesh. So we'll say Rashi adds in a very important point over here, which is actually quite fascinating. Remember again, once you bring out the ash, so the Mishnah told me that the ash of the inner Mizbeach, Rabbi say, what's the halacha? Is it subject to Me'ilah? No. Right now, such as the Me'ilah. What Rashi's pointing out over here is, however, once you go ahead and you bring it outside and you put it in the pile of ash on the side of the Mizbeach, meaning down on the ground, it does become subject to Me'ilah, which makes sense because, again, then it becomes mixed in with the rest of the Trumas HaDeshen, and we know already from last week's shir that Allah Chalamai said that is subject to Me'ilah. So now what the Gemara says is as follows, but we're not focusing on Me'ilah right now. The Gemara is actually asking a much more simple question, which is, From where do I know that you take the leftover ash from the inner Mizbeach and you place that on the ground by the outer Mizbeach with the rest of the Trumas HaDeshen? Where is that? Where do I know that from? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you, Amar Balazar, Damar Kra, Vehesiras Mara Sabino Sasab. So let's listen to this. So the pasuk that the Gemara quotes actually is by a bird carbon, the bird offering. And the pasuk says, Ve'sir es murasa benotzasa, you shall take out, murasa means the crop of the animal, benotzasa, this is by a bird, with its feathers, ve'shlich osa etzel ha-mizbeach kedma, you shall go ahead and literally throw it by the eastern side of the mizbeach, el mekom ha-deshen, to the place of the ash. So the Gemara says, "Im eino inyan lemizbeach achitzon." So look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Ve'esiras muratza benotzasa al makom hadeshen." Now, also what the Gemara is focusing on over here is the interesting statement, "Al makom hadeshen," to the place where the ash is placed. That phrase is seemingly redundant. Once you tell me, ultimately again, Eitzah hamizbeach kedma. That last phrase of El Mekom HaDeshen seems to be extraneous and unnecessary. So ultimately, again, says the Gemara, Eino Inyan, look at Rashi, L'michtav El Mekom HaDeshen, L'dishon Mizbeach HaChitzon. So we'll say, why do I need that phrase, El Mekom HaDeshen? So I don't need it to teach me regarding the Mizbeach HaChitzon, because by Mizbeach HaChitzon, by the outer altar, the Torah already tells me where to place the ash of the outer altar. Therefore, again, what do I do with this extraneous phrase? Ultimately, again, im einu inyan lemizbeach achitzon, teneu inyan lemizbeach hapanimi. Ultimately, again, the El Mekom HaDeshen must be coming to teach me that what? That even the ashes of the inner altar shall be placed by the Mekom of the Trumas HaDeshen, shall be placed ultimately again in the same place where the ashes of the outer altar are placed by the corner of the Mizbeach. Look at Rashi again. Im eino inyan lemichtav El Mekom HaDeshen ledishon lemizbeach achitzon, daksib bei deshen acher, dichsib veherim es HaDeshen, teneu inyan, hai El Mekom HaDeshen, the Dishon Mizbeach HaPnimi VaMenorah, Shesham Haya Mekomo Demolin Bo Kibetshumas HaDeshen Shom Mizbeach HaChitzon Amunachshon. So, we'll say, therefore, again, essentially a very simple drasha. There is an extra phrase. Ultimately, again, of El Mekom HaDeshen. I don't need that phrase to teach me about the ashes of the outer altar. Therefore, what do I use it for? The ashes of the inner altar. And to teach you that whatever leftover ashes there are of the Mizbeach HaPnimi are placed in the same place where the ashes of the outer altar are deposited as well. To which the Gemara says, Ema, idi Mizbeach HaChitzon, Blik Ba'ala Makom. I don't understand. Why don't you just say both phrases come to teach you regarding the ashes of the outer altar? And it's just coming to tell you where exactly to place them. Im kein lemakra itzel HaMizbeach. My HaDeshen. So we'll say, if that's the case, let it just say, Eitzel HaMizbeach. why do I need this phrase, Haddeshen? Dafilu Mizbeach HaPnimi. Supposed to, therefore, again, Haddeshen comes to teach you that even the ashes of the inner altar are halacha lemaisa deposited in the same place as the ashes of the outer altar. Supposed to say, this is really just, I just want to point out, this is a fascinating halacha that you would not glean from the psukim. You just would not glean it because the Torah doesn't express this explicitly. But we learn again from this extra phrase of El Mekom HaDeshen that ultimately the ashes of the Mizbeach HaPnimi are placed in the same place as the ashes of the Mizbeach HaChitzon by the pile, by the side of the Mizbeach. This is on the ground, by the Trumas HaDeshen. Incredible. It says the Menorah Minolon. So I'll say, so far that only teaches me about the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the inner altar. What about the ashes of the menorah, to which the Gemara says, Deshen HaDeshen. I will say, so the fact the Torah could have just said Mekom Deshen, instead it uses the phrase of Hadeshen. It uses an elongated form of the word. So I will say, whenever the Torah uses an elongated form, that comes to teach me a drasha as well. And therefore, Hadeshen teaches me that the same way that the ashes of the inner altar are deposited in the same place as the ashes of the outer altar, so too the ashes of the menorah are also placed in the same spot as the ashes of the inner and outer altar. So we'll say, incredible halacha. Good, and that is this is halacha lemaisa, says the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon argues with the previous Mishnah. Remember, in the previous Mishnah said that if you have Torin that have not reached the age to be offered, or Bnei Yonah, which have aged out, they are not subject to Me'ilah. Rabbi Shimon comes along and he argues. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Torin Shelo Higiyas Manon, Molin Boim. So we'll say, Rabbi Shimon says, Torin, turtle doves, that have not yet reached the age where they could be used for karbanos, are subject to Me'ilah. So we'll say, so Rabbi Shimon says, if it hasn't yet reached the age, it's subject to Me'ilah. Bnei Yonah Sha'avres Manon, Lo'nanin V'lo Molin Boim. But ultimately, again, Bnei Yonah, pigeons, that have already aged out, you can't get Hana, and also again, they are not subject to Me'ilah. So I'll say, Rabbi Shimon is dafka coming to argue in the case of Torin, of turtle doves. The Tanakama in the previous Mishnah said that what? Torin that have not yet reached their age of sacrificial fitness are not subject to Me'ilah. Rabbi Shimon says, yes, they are. Even though they can't be offered up as a karbon, they are still going to be subject ultimately again to Me'ilah. To Me'ilah. Eric, that's at your own risk, my friend. That is exceeding the maximum weight for the tabletop stender. Yeah, good. Good move. Excellent. Says the Gemara. You know, it's a good mussar. You have to know, in life, you have to know how much weight you could handle on your shoulders. That stender, you know, that little swivel thing, pocket size at most. Not for a chasen shas, it is not. Says the Gemara, Sabishlama Rabbi Shimon Kiddik Tani Taima. So we'll say, listen to this. So now we're going to get to the fundamental machlokes over here. What is it exactly that, what is the nekudas hamachlokes here? So we'll say, Rabbi Shimon essentially says like this, that an animal, in this case particularly a bird, that has not yet reached the age of sacrificial fitness is still going to be subject to Me'ilah. Once it's aged out, he will agree it is no longer subject to Me'ilah. So what's, so we'll say, the Rabbanon on the other hand argue on that. They say an animal that hasn't reached the age, as well as the animal that has aged out, are both the same. If you can't be offered up as a karban, then what? By definition, you're not subject to Me'ilah. So what's Rabbi Shimon's logic? So Bishlam Rabbi Shimon Kiddik Tani Taima. Rabbi Shimon's logic has been espoused elsewhere. Shai Rabbi Shimon Omer. Kal haroi la'achar zman ve'ikdisho besoch zmano hari hu belo sasa ve'ein bokari. So we'll see Rabbi Shimon, he's actually espoused his shita elsewhere, I will say. So Rabbi Shimon says that halacha lemaisa, remember again, if you have an animal that is not yet fit for sacrificial service, on a simple level, what's the simplest case of this? Torah says that an animal is only fit to be offered up as a carbon when? After 8 days. Right? 8 days and on. What happens if you go ahead? Now, Rabbi Shimon's case is actually a very interesting one. Rabbi Shimon is, let's say you take an animal that is 6 days old, you designate it as a karban, and you shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Shchutei chutz. Outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Shimon says, if you went ahead and you did that, what's the halacha? Kala roi la'achar zmano, v'hiktish besoch zmano. If you have an animal that will be fit later on. But you're now offering it before its prescribed time. You're offering, meaning it will become fit, wait another 2 days, and it's a perfectly fine carbon. But you're offering it up when it's 6 days old. But, so what happens? You shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Harihu below sasa. You're in violation of a lav. Vein bokar. Normally the halacha is for shrutei chutz. That is it, that you're chayv kares. But this is not a real case of shrutei chutz. Why not? Why not? Because the animal is not yet sacrificially fit. Right? Halachmais, it's only 6 days old. It's not yet really sacrificially fit. So it's a lav, but there's no kares. Shabbos said, so we see Rabbi Shimon holds that what? Even an animal that has not yet reached the age of sacrificial fitness, still what? Still what? Still has some level of sacrificial identity. Shabbos said, how do I know that? How do I know that? Because I'm in violation of a lav. Remember again, if it was totally mufka, it was totally removed from the parsha of Karbanos, then what? When I shechted it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there would be nothing. The fact, okay, there's no kares, because it's not a real karban, but there's still a lav, which tells me there's still an element of sacrificial fitness. Ah, Rabbi Shimon says, therefore, in the case of Torin, even though the tar, the turtle dove, is not yet, it's not old enough, it's not mature enough to be offered up on the Mizbeach, ultimately, again, it could still be subject to Mi'ilah. However, El Rabbanon, Maishnam and Mechusrizman, but according to the Rabbanon, I will say, why is it that Halacha Lamaisa Tar, a turtle dove, that is not yet old enough, why should this be any different than a 6-day-old animal, which if shechted outside of the Beis HaMikdash, although you won't be subject to kares, will still be in violation of Allah, telling you that even an animal that has not yet reached the age threshold for sacrificial fitness still has some level of sanctity. If it has some level of sanctity, then what? That it should be subject to Me'ilah as well. To which the Gemara says, no, the Rabbana will say, Amri, Mechusr Zman, Midi Dehavi Abal Mom. Shabbos Debar Pidyon Hu. So the Rabbanan say, you're right. We agree in the case of Mechusr Zman. If you go ahead and you offer up a carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash that is 6 days old, Mechusr Zman. So the reason why that carbon has some level of sanctity is because what is that called? That's comparable to a Balmum, to an animal with a blemish. In other words, Rabbanan say, being too young is also a Mum. The good news is, it's a Mum over. Right? It goes away. Just wait a little bit of time. And ultimately, again, that boom goes away. So it says, the interest is... For some people, right? So it says, ultimately, this is quite interesting. The Gemara is explaining that halacha lemaisa, if you have an animal that is too young, so an animal that is too young is the equivalent of a bal mum. Just like an animal that is a bal mum, the bar pinyon, who has the ability to be redeemed, so to an animal that is too young also has the ability to be redeemed. However, the Rabbanon say, this doesn't apply to birds. Why not? Avahani ofos, kevan de'in mum posel ba'ofos, in la'ofos pinyon. But the Rabbanon will say, that ultimately, again, the concept of mumin, interestingly enough, does not apply to birds. Ein tamos v'zichros ba'ofos. Remember, again, we've seen that ultimately neither gender nor mumin play a role in bird offerings. So therefore, the Rabbanon will say, in the case of Mechusr Zman, the reason that animal has some level of sacrificial sanctity is because it's no different than a Bal Mum. Just like a Bal Mum has Pidyon, so to an animal that is Mechusr Zman has Pidyon. But by Ophos, where what? Where there is no din, ultimately, of what? There is no din of Mumin, therefore the din of Mechusr Zman doesn't apply as well. And therefore, the Rabbanon will say that a turtle dove, that is less than the required age, essentially has no sacrificial sanctity. And because it has no sacrificial sanctity, ultimately, not subject to Me'ilah. So we'll say this is the point of contention between Rabbi Shimon, ultimately again, and Rabbonon. Rabbi Shimon looks at a tar, at an underage turtle dove, as no different than any other carbon that is Mechusr Zman. And any other animal that is Mechusr Zman still has some level of sacrificial sanctity, and therefore is subject to Me'ilah. The Rabbanon say, no, the din of Mechusr Zman is a din in a Bal Mum. But the concept of Bal Mum does not apply to Ophos. Therefore, an oath that is Mechusr Zman has no sacrificial sanctity, and therefore no Me'ilah. Amar Ula, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Kachim Shemesu. We're going to say, if you have Kachim that died, right? The sacrificial animal that died. Yotzu Midei Me'ilah Dvar Torah. We're going to say, he's actually seen this before. That once you have a sacrificial animal that dies, it is no longer subject to Me'ilah Midoraisa. Yosef Ula v'kamer l'ha Shmaita, Sula was sitting over and saying over this ruling, Amr Rav Chista, man shama lachol Rabbi Yochanan Rabach. So what's Rav Chista heard? This, right? And remember again, Ula saying this over in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that once Kachim die, they are no longer subject ultimately again to Me'ila Midda Oraisa. Rav Chista hears this and he says, man shama lachol Rabbi Yochanan Rabach. V'chi kedusha shabahen leheichan halcha. So Rav Chista says, Ula, who in their right mind will listen to you and Rabbi Yochanan, your Rebbe? I think, well, this is such a crazy ruling. How can you say that an animal that died is no longer subject to Me'ila? What happened to its sanctity? Right? It wasn't when the animal was alive, it had sanctity. Just because it died, where did that sanctity go? Amarle tikshim asnisin. To which Ula responds, well, what about our Mishnah? Torin shli giyazmanon ubnei yona sha'avrazmanon. Lo nanin v'lo mo'alin. So we'll say, what did the Mishnah say? The previous Mishnah said that halacha l'maisa, if you have torin, right, turtle doves that have not yet reached the age of sacrificial fitness, or you have pigeons that have aged out, you can't get hano, and they're not subject to me'ila. Why don't you say the same thing? We'll say, by the case of pigeons. By the case of pigeons which aged out, why would you say they're not subject to Mila? After all, Hachanami, Nema Kedusha Sheba and Leheicha Halcha. Where did their Kedusha go? Or why don't you ask the same question over here in the Mishnah? Where did the Kedusha go? Amarle, to which Rav Chista says, Modim Lacha Di'ika Mi'ila Midrabanan. Ultimately, again, I would agree with you that Allah Kalamaisa, once the animals die, this is by Kajim Shemesu, if the animals die, that ultimately, again, they should still be subject to Me'ila Midrabanan. Because since they had sanctity, they now died, they should at least be Me'ila Midrabanan. However, Kashili, but my problem is, Mi'ika Midi di Me'ikara lo Ispe Me'ila, Ulebasof Ispe Me'ila. So we'll say, what he was bothered by was the following. What he was bothered by is like this. Is using this logic, what you would then say is, Kachim Kalim that died also would also be subject to Me'ila, Midrabanan. Here's the problem. Bosa, going back for just a moment, when do Kachim Kalim become subject to Me'ila? Remember again? Only after when? Only after Zrika. So remember again, Bosa, to say Kachim Kadashim that died, that they should be subject to Me'ila, I understand. Because why? Because ultimately, again, they were subject to Mila when they were alive. Mila Midarai. So now you want to tell me that they died, they should be subject to Mila Midrabanan. I could hear that. But to tell me that Kachim Kalim that died should be subject to Mila, that doesn't make any sense. Why? Because Kachim Kalim, when they were alive, were not subject to Mila. They only become subject to Mila after Zrika. So could it be that something that when it was alive wasn't subject to Mila, and now that it dies will be subject to Mila? To Grishni Gemara says below, is that true? Meaning, so Gemara is making the assumption, is that true? Something in its initial state, so to speak, was not subject to Mila, that it can't become subject to Mila later on. But look at this case, Vaikadam. Both say, this is incredible. Vaikadam, the Me'ikar of this family, let's both say, Dam, sacrificial blood, is not initially subject to Me'ila. Right? So Dam is not subject to Me'ila. However, listen to this. Ulubasov ispemila. Both say this is incredible. So blood ultimately again originally was not subject to Me'ila. But halacha lemaisa, later on it did become subject to Me'ila. Where? Listen to this. Disnan. Dam bitchila in mo'alin bo. Both say we'll discuss why this is later on. But halacha lemaisa, dam is not subject to the halachos of Me'ila. Yet not yatzal enachal kidron mo'alin bo. Well, so listen to this. What would they do with dam? So remember, the residual dam was poured down the drain, right? There were these sheets and these drains. So Rabbi says, well, we saw the sheets in yesterday's daf also. But these drains, the drains would drain out into the Kidron Valley, right? The Kidron Valley. So I say, what would happen with the dam? So the farmers would often want to go ahead and take the dam and use it for what? Fertilizer. So we'll say, so now the Gemara says over here, amazingly enough, dam inside of the Beis HaMikdash was not subject to Me'ila. Yet when it flowed out into the Kidron Valley, it was subject to Me'ila. So again, we're going to get into the technicalities of this, but what do you see from here? You see from here that something that you could have a situation of something that initially was not subject to Me'ila, and then later on does become subject to Me'ila. So based on the dam paradigm, I can make the argument that what? That Kachim Kalim, which when they were alive were not subject to Me'ila, but then what? Once they die, maybe do become subject to Me'ila Midrabanan. To which the Gemara says, no. Amri Hasam Nami Ika Me'ila Me'ikar. It's not true, by the way. Blood is subject to Me'ila initially when? Amadeis? Domarav, Hamakis Dam Lebehemas Kachim, Aser Banha Amolinba. We'll say that there is a case of Dam. What's the case of Dam? If one does bloodletting. We'll say, so if one has a sacrificial animal that is ill. See, remember again, Talmudic remedies, we'll say, could pretty much be consolidated into three major things: bloodletting, undiluted wine, and fatty meat. Like that's the cure for all ailments, which sounds pretty good. Besides the bloodletting, right? The meat and the wine sounds good. As long as I guess you drink the wine, eat the meat, then you can do whatever you want, right? Bloodletting, not bloodletting. So again, I will say, remember, this is very important. That in general, remember again, Chazal's knowledge of medicine was not based in Torah. It was based on whatever conventional medical norms there were. So again, we know that for a very, very, very long time, it was assumed that bloodletting could take care of most maladies. And again, the fatty meat and the diluted wine, it's just a crowd pleaser. You know, it's just not, it always works. So the Gemara says over here, if you have a situation, ultimately again, if you have a situation of a sacrificial animal that is sick, so you would be permitted to do bloodletting on that animal. So we'll say, what's the status of that blood? That blood would be subject to me'ilah. Interestingly enough, because it became, so we'll say, for the Gemara says, don't bring me a raya ultimately again. Don't bring me a raya from blood, because halacha lemaisa, blood is subject to me'ilah even before it flows out from the Kidron Valley. So we'll say, so just for our, so let's see the rest of this. Gufa, omrav hunamrav. So we'll say, now we're gonna pick up on this because it's actually quite interesting. So now you told me that if you do bloodletting from a sacrificial animal, halacha lemaisa, ultimately again the blood itself is subject to mi'ilah. Masiv Rav Hamnuna. So we'll say, listen to this. Rav Hamnuna contrasts this, and we're gonna get into this because it's actually quite fascinating. Contrast this with the following: Chalav Hamukdashin Ubeitzei Torin. We'll say, listen to the following. What happens if you have a sacrificial animal and you milk the animal? What's the status of the milk? So the halacha is that the milk itself, similarly again, the eggs of sacrificial birds, beitei torin, lo nenin, ideally you shouldn't get hana, v'lo molin. But ultimately, again, it is not subject to me'ilah. Not subject to me'ilah. So we'll say, so the assumption is that what? The assumption is that halacha lemaisa, that blood would have the same status as what? As milk and as eggs. Yet we see that milk and eggs are not subject to me'ilah, and you told me that blood is. So what's going on over here? Amalei ki kamina lagabi dam, delomis kayemis below dam. Well, there's a fundamental difference, right? An animal cannot live without blood. Blood is an indispensable part to the life of the animal. But eggs and milk, which are not necessary to the life of the animal itself, halacha lemaisa, are not subject to me'ilah. So essentially what the Gemara is saying is like this. It is only items that are part of the actual, or I should say an indispensable part of the organic continuity of the animal that are subject to me'ilah. But things that just because it comes from the animal doesn't automatically make it subject to me'ilah. So blood, which is by definition the necessity for the continuity, the organic continuity of the animal, ultimately, again, will be subject to me'ilah. Milk, eggs, which is something additional, will not be subject to me'ilah. Master of Mishash, so Mishash is really, is that true? What about Hazavel Vaperesh Shebechatzer? So listen to this. So remember again, in the Beis HaMikdash, animals were often kept inside of a pen. Because remember, the Beis HaMikdash itself sold animals. So you had a pen where animals were kept. So Bo said, what's the halacha? In that pen, you had manure. So what's the status of the manure? Bless you. Ein nanin ve'ein mo'alin. Ultimately, again, so the manure itself, you can't get hanah from it. But ultimately, again, it is not subject to me'ila as well. The yiplu dameha lelishka. But ultimately, again, I will say, if you sell it off, the proceeds go to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, 1 second, I will say, so why shouldn't the manure be subject to me'ilah? After all, again, what's the criteria for being subject to me'ilah? What's the criteria? It has to be an indispensable part of the animal. I will say, if the animal is unable to relieve itself, the animal will die. So the ability to produce excrement is obviously something that is an indispensable part of the life of the animal. So I don't have to say, am I hakanami lo mekayim v'lo perishin? An animal cannot live if it doesn't excrete. Therefore, the excrement, the manure, should have the same status of blood, and therefore should be subject to me'ilah. To which the Gemara says, Amri, my iria hadein perish to min alma ka'asile. Azil hai asi achrina. La fuke dam migufe ha megufe. Supposed to listen to this. Actually, quite a fascinating distinction. Excrement is the result of what? Things which are external to the animal. Supposed to say, when does the animal excrete? The animal eats something, digests it, and excretes whatever, keeps whatever it has to keep, and excretes the rest. So the concept of excrement is something that is generated by something external to the animal. Masha'en came blood is something that is what? That is part and parcel of the animal itself. So the Gemara is suggesting now a twofold. So number one, things which are not part and parcel of the animal itself, like milk, like eggs, will not be subject to milah. Furthermore, things which are generated from items external to the animal, like excrement, which is generated by things that the animal eats, will also not be subject to mi'ilah, as opposed to blood, which is part of the body itself of the animal. To which the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, katani lo'nen v'lo mo'alin, v'damav l'lishka. So again, remember we said that ultimately, again, the proceeds. So now, I understand now why the excrement itself is not subject to mi'ilah. But interestingly enough, what is the halacha? If you sell the excrement, Rabbi Sai, who gets the proceeds? The proceeds of the excrement sale go to the Beis HaMikdash. So again, this makes sense according to Rabbi Elazar, because what does Rabbi Elazar say? Anytime you have a concept of kadosh ve'eno kadosh, which Rabbi Elazar means nanin lo nanin v'lo molin. So anytime you have a rabbinic prohibition on something, that ultimately what? Halacha l'maisa, you can't get hana, but it's also not subject to mi'ilah. So halacha l'maisa, the proceeds belong to the Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Elazar say a number of very important facts here. So first of all, again, blood itself, is sometimes subject to mi'ilah and sometimes not. If it's just the normal case of sacrificial service where the blood is being sprinkled and then being poured, it is not subject to mi'ilah until it trickles out into the Kidron Valley. Once it reaches the Kidron Valley, it will be subject to mi'ilah. We'll see this sugya midrabanan. However, again, if you do bloodletting on a sacrificial animal, then what? Then halacha lamaisa, it will be subject to mi'ilah midda'oraisa. Milk and eggs, we're going to get to, actually, it's our next Mishnah, so we'll leave milk and eggs for just a moment. Excrement, I will say, what's the halacha? Lo nanin v'lo molin, not subject to mi'ilah. Why not? The klal is very important. Because apparently only items which are an indispensable part of the life and of the body of the animal are subject to mi'ilah. Blood, which is part and parcel of the body and necessary for the life of the animal, subject to mi'ilah. Excrement, which is generated for something external from the animal, not subject to mi'ilah. Milk and eggs, which are ultimately, again, not an indispensable part of the animal, not subject to mi'ilah. They both say, just so you know, how do we pass him? Because you know this is bothering you. Right, how do we pass in halacha lemaisa again in Rabbi Shimon versus the Tanakama? We'll say, what about underage turtle doves or aged out pigeons? We passing like the Rabbanon that they are not subject to mi'ilah, which is not a chiddush, because ultimately, again, at the end of the day, in order to be subject to mi'ilah, what has to be the halacha? You have to be sacrificially fit. If you're not, now again, there of course, remember, there's an exception to this, meaning you could be subject to mi'ilah even if you're not going to be sacrificed, if you're kedushas for Bet HaKabayis, we're going to discuss this as well. But assuming we're talking about for karbanos, in order to be subject, if you are a karban, in order to be subject to mi'ilah, you must be sacrificially fit. So therefore, again, if you're too young, if you're too old, halacha lemaisa, you are not subject to mi'ilah. Beautiful. Next Mishnah. Chalav hamukdashim. So we'll say, what about, again, so now, again, we've seen this already, a little bit anticlimactic, but says the Mishnah, Chalav HaMukdashin. I will say, just want to point out, you have to admit it, that you never thought Mi'ilah would be this exciting. Right? I'm just saying, like, these are great Gemaras, right? You hear Mi'ilah, and again, you think to yourself, oh boy, okay, I know, I just got to make it till January 4th. I'm almost there. You know, I know if you're on the email list for the Aguda, for the Siyum HaShas, They send out like daily emails. Like it feels like five emails a day, right? 99 blot, I think was the last one. 97 blot, right? So it's incredible, but it's also incredible because like every, they'll say, so sometimes you think when we get to these mishnayos, okay, let me just hold on. I've made it mamish almost 7.5 years. Just hold on a bit more. All I have to do is pretend like I'm paying attention for another 3 months. Also, what you have to admit, the truth is these Gemaras are very understandable and very graspable, right? And the truth is, again, it's also very helpful. It's very nice that it's a lot of broken up Mishnayos and Gemaras, smaller digestible pieces. But it's incredible. You can actually emerge from these Masechtas knowing what happened in the Beis HaMikdash. It's incredible. Chalav HaMukdash in Beit HaTorin. So we'll see if you have blood, ultimately. See, should we put on the air conditioning here a little bit? Does it work?
I don't think it's working.
Okay. Also, we have a building fund. If anyone, so again, actually, the dedication opportunity for the new compressors in the building is still open. It's still open. We can work out a payment plan. It could be yours. So says the Mishnah, Chalav HaMukdashin. Ultimately, again, if you have blood from Karbanos. Oh, by the way, that wasn't a joke, actually. The dedication opportunity is really open, if you want it. Beitzi Mukdashin or Beitzi Torin. So we'll say if you have blood from Karbanos or eggs from birds. Sorry, Chalav. Chalav. So we'll say if you have milk from animals, animal milk, right, carbon milk, or again, eggs from birds, from sacrificial birds. Lonanin v'lamo. So ideally over here, when we say lonanin, it means we don't want you getting hana. Why can't you get hana from it? Why not? Because it comes from a sacrificial item. So therefore, you're not supposed to get hana, but it is not subject to me'ilah. We'll say a very important qualification. When is that true? Because shem is there. They both say, the Gemara, as we're going to see, fundamentally misunderstands what this means. But for our purpose only, kachim izbeach means if it's going to be sacrificed. A carbon. So we'll say, listen to this. If you have an animal that is pledged for kachim be'ed kavais, which means what, Rabosai? Financial sanctity. If you have a carbon that is pledged for kachim, meaning I'm makdish this animal for financial sanctity, which also means what do you do with the animal that is pledged for kachim be'ed kavais? What do you do with that? You sell it and use the proceeds for the Beis HaMikdash. So in that case, Hikdish Tanagoles, Molin Baba Beit Sasa. Shabbos said, therefore, if you are Makdish, a chicken, for example, ultimately, again, Ni'ilah applies to the chicken, to the eggs. Chamor, if you are Makdish, a chamar, a donkey, Molin Baba Chalba. Ultimately, again, both the donkey itself and its milk are subject to the Shabbos said, a very important qualification. That Halacha Lamaisa, when do we say that Halacha Lamaisa, the eggs or the milk of a carbon is not subject to Ni'ilah? That is when the animal is going to be offered up as a carbon. But if that one has physical sanctity, but if the animal has financial sanctity, that means every single part of the animal is sanctified. The eggs, the milk, and they will all be subject to Mi'ilah. Says the Gemara, El Gabi Mizbeach Ki Akdusha Kidusha Zdamim Lo Ispe Mi'ilah. So we'll say what the Gemara now is assuming is as follows. And this is interesting why the Gemara made this assumption. The Gemara says that when we were speaking about Kadshe Mizbeach, that Kadshe Mizbeach means animals that are pledged, that have financial sanctity, but the goal is I'm going to sell them off and use the proceeds to purchase karbanos. So if that's the case, that the animal has financial sanctity and it's going to be sold and used to purchase karbanos, so why wouldn't the eggs and the milk be sanctified as well? No, you're misunderstanding what we're saying. We'll say ultimately again, this is what it means to say. We'll say, when do we say that the milk and the eggs of the carbon do not have any level of mila, any level of sanctity? That's when what? The animal itself is pledged as a carbon. If the animal itself is pledged as a carbon, then the milk and the eggs have no sanctity, right? Not subject to me'ilah. Avol, hikdishu kidushastam legab mizbeach. Rabbi said, if the animal has financial sanctity, i.e., you pledged its value to the Beis HaMikdash, then what? Naase kimish hikdish lo bedakabayis. Then Rabbi said, again, once the animal has financial sanctity, whether you pledged its financial sanctity in a way that I'm going to sell off this animal and use the proceeds to purchase karbanos, or I'm going to sell off the animal and the proceeds ultimately again will go to the Beis HaMikdash is irrelevant. In that case, the animal in its entirety is kadosh. Both the body of the animal as well as what? The eggs, and the milk and the blood and anything that comes from it. Tanagolas molin babe sasa. So for example, if you pledged a chicken, let's say you pledged a chicken, remember again, a chicken is not, has no sacrificial sanctity. It would only have kedushas damim. So ultimately again, it would be subject to me'ilah, the chicken, its eggs, chamora, donkey is even a bigger example. But let's say you can be makdish a donkey for bed the kamayis. Obviously a donkey is not sacrificially fit under any circumstances. Yet if you pledged financial sanctity with that animal, then what? The donkey is subject to me'ilah, and ultimately, again, its milk goes off. So therefore, Rabbi, we emerge with a fascinating halachic construct. If you have an animal that is itself is actively pledged as a karban, then Rabbi say, what is the halacha? What is the halacha? Then ultimately, again, it is only the body of the animal itself, with its blood, depending on the circumstances, that is subject to me'ilah. The eggs, the milk, not subject to me'ilah. If an animal has financial sanctity, then what? Then every single part of the animal is subject to me'ilah, including its milk, as well as including its eggs. We'll also stop over here for today. We're going to pick up here tomorrow. I want to share with you just a brief idea for Rosh Hashanah. We'll say also, just please look at the schedule for the Afyomi. Meretz Hashem, I'll be giving this shir over Yantiv. You can't nap anyway, so you might as well, Meretz Hashem, maximize the day. We'll also, I'll be learning Meretz Hashem. What time is it?
5:10
both days?
No, tomorrow 5:10.
Because Said will put it out to Mirza Shem on the WhatsApp, and I'm also looking forward to learning with all of you over the course of Yantra.